Welcome to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, where I, Monique Chambers, am joined by businesses that have sold their product and services overseas. Welcome to this week's Exporting Malta with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Matthew Rota from the European Pilot Academy.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. I don't like flying.
Well, you shouldn't be terrified from flying. It's something that pilots are trained for, and they do reconnaissance checks which keep them to the safety that they are meant to be.
So, are you a pilot yourself?
Yes, I had to do it as well. Obviously, it's a family business, so okay. I had to be in the aviation as well. So I decided to do the license as well myself.
Big planes, little planes?
Small planes.
Okay.
Purely as hobby, and that's it.
Yeah. Yes. Don't blame you. it doesn't stop me doing anything, but I don't like it.
No, it has to be in you, I think. And that's probably one of the main requisites that we see from students. It has to be in you to actually become a pilot. You can't force yourself to become a pilot.
You can't just be a pilot because you like traveling.
Maybe yes, but you do have to love the passion of aviation itself to actually become a pilot.
So what does somebody need to have? Are there, you know, requisites on eyesight and
so
health?
So in general, the way it works as a program, the student has to have a basic level of maths, physics and English.
Okay.
O-level, A-level standard in Malta is enough, even O-level standard. Obviously, the more advanced you are, the better it is for you for certain topics. Then, as you clearly mentioned, you have to pass a medical exam, which would go on eyesight. You can wear corrective lenses, but there are certain limits.
Okay.
You have to have good general health. That's what I like to say.
So you said maths, physics and...
Maths, physics and English.
English, of course, because of all the communication.
Everything is in English, so obviously you have to have a good level of English to obviously do the full program.
And the physics because of knowing which way...
Physics because of laws and all the laws that go into the full terminology of the actual flying of the aircraft.
Yeah, somebody told me once that when it's really windy, that's better for the plane. I thought that.
Yes, I know. So it doesn't really make a difference to the aircraft. It might help, but doesn't really make a difference.
Because they tried to tell me that, you know, 4.7's fine. And I'm like, shut up.
So, for the passenger, I don't think it's really comfortable with 4.7. For the pilots, they're used to it, so it should be okay. Should be.
So the pilots that you teach, do they learn to fly little planes or also big planes?
As a school, and this is what helped us grow, is we offer all the program from start, so as you are today, up to a commercial pilot's license.
Okay.
It would take roughly 2 years full-time to complete the full program.
Okay.
And it would go anything from knowing nothing on aviation to literally becoming not an expert, but a full commercial pilot at the end of the program. So the way it works is you start with the ground school part of small aircrafts, do the flying part on small aircrafts, get that done, then move on to the next stage, which is the commercial side.
And of course, in Malta, there's the opportunity for, you know, fun flying.
Yes,
private jets, right up to the
You can take it as anything. So if you'd like but to purely make money from flying, you have to do the full two-year program. If you purely would like to do it just as a hobby, you can as well. Just do the simple license, PPL, and get that as a hobby.
But this, you have to have had the O-level, so you can't be a teenager to do this.
Realistically, to do the private pilot license, you do not require even O-levels.
Okay.
You require
That's
O-levels.
The little plane, the private
correct,
pilot.
Correct,
okay.
correct.
So does that allow you to take someone with you, or is that...
You can, you just can't make money from flying.
Okay.
That's purely that simple.
Uh-huh.
To make money from flying, like becoming a pilot for purely making money and a living, you have to get to the commercial pilot's license, which would be a two-year program, the full-time program.
Because what makes someone want to be a pilot? I'd ask a dentist the same question, to be fair, but...
I like to see it this way. If you're 6-7 years old and you look up into the sky whenever you hear a plane... You're nearly there to become a pilot.
Yeah.
Then it's basically just learning the full philosophy of how an aircraft lands, takeoffs, the full principle of actually flying. And everything is obviously explained throughout in our program.
So do you do lots of coursework as well? You're not just playing on planes, you have to do a lot of...
It is a mix of both ground school and flying, that's what I like to say. The ground school is very important because you understand what actually happens in the aircraft and what actually happens in the flying. The way we structure our programs is that you always get the ground school done, then the flying after.
Okay.
Because that's the easiest thing. And you first understand what's actually happening, then you actually do
then
it.
Then you're let loose. Yeah. Yes. So obviously Malta is expanding and expanding, you know, airlines coming in, more and more routes, which is fantastic. I love it that we can, you know, travel all the time. But you get pilots from overseas to come to your school as well.
So, what we offer as European Pilot Academy is called EASA, European Aviation Safety Agency. This is basically the ruling body for all of Europe.
Okay.
So what this means, if you get a license from Malta or from Italy, it's technically the same license from Germany, France, UK. UK is a bit. You mentioned them, and basically you have a EASA license. The EASA license is held in very high regard throughout the world. So any student that would like to get a EASA license technically can find any school in Europe and go to the course there. Outside of Europe, some authorities do accept it as well.
Okay.
So, like, for example, Turkish Airlines, Emirates, Etihad, Qatar Airways, they would accept the EASA license as well. So technically we have a market that's all over Europe and even outside of Europe.
And if those pilots want to work in Europe, they have to have this as a license anyway.
Correct. So technically we get students from all over the world, and that's what helped us expand and get to this level as well. Because obviously getting students from all over the world now, inquiring about your course in small Malta.
Ah, so it's a two-year full-time course.
Correct.
So they would have to come here, live here for 2 years.
They come here, live here, be part of a Maltese culture for the full two-year program to get the full license.
Okay. And then if say they wanted to go and do long-haul kind of stuff.
So they would usually start off with, let's say, smaller airlines, like Ryanair, EasyJet, Air Malta, Wizz Air, Lufthansa, doing short-haul flights, getting the experience, then slowly coming to long-haul flights. But the terminology is all based on you building experience towards becoming a captain of long-haul flights, so on and so forth.
I mean, is it that different when you do long haul, or is it just you have to go higher up,
it's
bigger
the same,
plane?
Same exact thing, same exact principle.
You know.
Semi. It's the same exact principle. Ah. Obviously, you have to monitor the aircraft for a longer period. That's the only difference.
But you have rotations of captains and stuff.
Yes and no. It depends how long. So long haul depends on the airlines, depends on the requirements, it depends on obviously the regulations as well, and depends how long the actual flight is.
And that will be governed. So is it like up to 7 hours? It's this rule up
to 12 hours.
It's
governed everything by law and everything, even the number of hours that you can fly per day, per year, per month, so on and so forth.
So is that why some airlines just get you on, race you up, and get you down because they've got their their maximum?
That is to usually work the aircraft even more.
Mm.
So if they're saving 15 minutes on the ground per flight, you can get an extra flight per day.
Wow.
Yes.
When you think of it like that, actually.
Yes, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
Even like weight, for example, like the extra cargo that you're actually putting is actually extra fuel that you need. That's simple, so.
Mm. So how many sort of students have you had, and when did you get your EASA?
Basically, we started the school and founded the school in 1993.
Okay, so long
28 years ago now. It was previously JAA, then it moved to EASA 5-6 years ago, I think, roughly. And basically, we had a huge reshuffle in manuals, paperwork's nightmare. We decided to change the full infrastructure of our school as well. So basically, we focused on getting the aircraft up to date with today's avionics. Everything that you see, like an on the phone, technology, glass cockpit, so on and so forth. And we've decided to invest heavily in this part. We got a simulator as well to just be competitive with the rest of Europe. Because that's the biggest problem. You have an open market now.
So you have a simulator?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes, we have our own simulator as well. Because half of the advanced training is actually done on the simulator.
Right.
And if you're doing it on an aircraft compared to a simulator, it's obviously more expensive. And you have to be competitive with full Europe. And basically, at that point, so 7-8 years ago, we decided to, what is the roadmap that we'd like to get, and where would we like to get today, tomorrow, with our school? So we've taught over 2,500 students so far, believe it or not. We're having increasing students every year. At the moment, we have 100 students, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yes. It's quite a big operation.
So 100 people studying for 2 years.
Yes.
But is that in different cohorts, so you have different...
They're in different stages, so some stages are in the first stage, some are towards the end, some are in the middle, the hardest part, so... But basically, they're all going to the same goal at the end of the day, different ages, different cultures, so you get a very nice mix of students.
And how do you find that? What are the differences in types of pilots?
It's not more so the different types of pilots, it's their different mentality and what they're used to.
Okay.
For example, Arabs are not used to arriving on time. Icelandic students are used to arriving on time. two totally different students, but same goal, same principle. So the way and the principle you have to use with an Icelandic student might be very different with an Arab student. They both want to get to the same goal, but they'll get there in their own ways.
But they do appreciate that the timings are critical. Not just about a personal thing. These people can't make their next flight or...
And it's very important for them to get used to a certain structure and discipline from day one. So even ground school, okay, you can arrive 15 minutes late, it's not a problem, but is it?
Mm.
You arrive for your flight late. If you're flying an 8-20 with Air Malta, you'll probably be fired. So basically, we try to get them to the same goal, but have to understand their cultures as well throughout. And that is probably one of the toughest things that we had to get used to. Like even we have some Nepalese, some Indian students. Their food and their culture and their background is totally different to us Maltese, what we're used to eating. So even that, to agree terms with those students and what's okay for you as food and what's okay for you as timing is totally different.
And even, I'm guessing, you have to factor in religious considerations if people need to worship.
It's everything. So basically we have a program that, even though it's a 2-year program, fixed program that you should do, is still very flexible with each and every student, because it has to be. Because not all students are the same.
Ah.
And that's a must. If you have 100 students, you have 100 ways of getting them to your target and goal at the end of the day. It's just how good can you get them to that target without jeopardizing the safety, the concerns of the aircraft, and obviously them becoming good commercial pilots.
Yes. But like I said, the timing is absolutely critical.
Of course.
You can't stop because it's worship o'clock
or because it's something
you have to
but
keep going.
Even, for example, that would take you simply a month to get them on time and actually appreciating that, listen, you have to be on time. So with Icelandic students, they're there, you know, they're there on time. That's it.
Straight away. No, so it's quite a thing, because you don't think about the cultural differences when it comes
and
to
I think
something like this.
The biggest problem that we had in terms of expanding overseas and actually getting students from abroad was that it's not actually selling the program, because the program is the same, it's okay, they're happy with it, but it's actually all these small nits and bits that they wanted for their
lifestyle,
which made it what it is.
But they have to come here, they probably come on their own, or do they generally come in groups? You're saying about Nepalese students.
They usually come, say, 2, 3, 4 students at a batch, because obviously we want to make sure that we give them their own attention as well.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we have a lot of students, we split them up on various starting dates per year. It makes sense.
And you were saying about O-levels and things. Of course, that's different in every country as well.
As long as we get the standards, same 16, 18-year-old students, that standards, we're fine with.
Okay.
But, for example, Chinese. I've had Chinese students. They never start on the starting date. You have to send them 4 months, 5 months of English.
Okay.
It's the way it is. So you have to then have programs which assess if their English is good. Do an assessment, work it out from there. Then you have to have 3 months of general English, then specific aviation English. So we now got used to different cultures, different maybe ways of thinking, and what you can do to improve to get them to the same starting point and the same end goal at the end of the day.
And if I'm not mistaken, when you're actually a pilot, because I was writing a short story on this once, certain airlines, anyway, they rotate the team, so you don't generally work with the same crew every time.
Correct. Basically, all airlines have their own standards, and the standards have to be met by all pilots throughout, which is called SOP, Standard Operating Procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's a must. Because if obviously I'm flying with you, the day after I'm flying with other pilots, we're flying the same aircraft, we have to fly the same procedures. And the reason why airlines like to change pilots around is that you don't get that extra confidence with the pilot.
Yes.
And basically everybody's a bit more alert to the situation just in case something happens.
Yeah. It's quite amazing, actually. You think of the rostering job, let alone...
It is a nightmare. Even us, for example, as instructors, when we come to check certain students at certain stages of the program, we change instructors as well.
Okay.
Something simple to think of, but...
But you might like someone and might not like someone, and then it kind of...
But I'll give you an example. If you want to check and assess a student, and you have trained him up to this level, and you want to send him solo, flying alone for the first time, will you give a good judgment of that?
Mm.
So we you like to change the instructor just to make sure that the perspective of the different instructor is good on the student.
But also, I think with this, you know, your multinational environment anyway, it gives these pilots a taster that you're going to work with, you know, a Catholic tomorrow, a Muslim the next day, an American the next day.
It is the way it is in aviation. Ah. I mean, you have to get used to it. It's that simple.
Do they understand that before they come in, or do they want to be a pilot? Do they realize that you're not working with your best
friend? The majority do.
Okay.
The majority do. Hmm. You would get that one off that says, listen, because I want to work in Malta. That's, yes, but I mean, it's aviation. At the end of the day, you don't know where you're going to be as a pilot. And that's the reality.
Yeah.
But the majority of people do understand that, listen, a pilot's life is different. A, you are in Paris, B, you are in London. And that's the way it is. That's the way you live.
I found out something the other day, which I thought was quite interesting as well, that these small jet pilots, because I thought all the planes were here and they flew the plane from here, but no, they get on a normal plane to go and pick up their plane.
Basically, they move alongside the aircraft. So wherever the aircraft is, you have to start. Wherever the aircraft stops, you obviously have to stop, then catch the normal airline back home.
So that's another sort of rostering nightmare.
It is and it isn't. It's a bit easier. The planning-wise is a nightmare. Because you would get people that obviously are willing to pay whatever it is for the flight. Mm-hmm. Okay, today I am in Russia. I would like to go in an hour to London. Plan all that, get the pilot sorted, get everything sorted for me to take off in an hour. It's a different job to a normal airline job, let's put it this way. The private jet sector is nice because you get to experience the different sides of life.
But don't those little planes have to fly much lower?
No.
Oh, okay.
They can fly normal speeds as airlines, normal altitudes as airlines.
Oh, okay.
Some of them are quite
nifty.
Yeah, let's put it this way.
Yes. Because what's always put me off being a billionaire is if I had to fly everywhere by my own jet. I don't want to fly in the weather.
Do they fly as normal airliners, normal speed, everything. Obviously, you're paying
a lot
God
more.
Knows what.
But if you're a billionaire, it doesn't matter. You've got it. I'm not feeling sorry for them.
Yeah,
I know somebody who flies their dog on a jet. I mean,
it was bizarre. Some stories that I heard are just bizarre.
Mm. So you can train people for, like you said, just recreational flying?
Correct.
Right through?
Correct, correct.
And
correct.
The simulator thing, I'm interested in this.
Okay.
I'd love to go on that, actually.
Feel free to join. So the simulator is an aspect that is used for usually advanced training.
Mm-hmm.
We do give trials just for a person to experience what it's like.
Uh-huh.
But it's usually more for advanced training for the instrument part.
Right.
So when you're flying instruments, you're basically flying whatever you have as instruments in front of you. No weather outside, you can't see anything, so you have to obviously follow the instruments in front of you.
Okay.
And it's all about the procedures on what you're doing, what you're seeing, how to recognize what you're doing, and what your reaction is. And that's basically what you're doing in the sim.
So we're all planes.
So it's basically the same aircraft.
Laid out the same.
Same layout, just on the ground. That's it.
Ah. And every airplane, so say you go, a Boeing versus a...
So,
something else.
That is then advanced simulators. So, our simulator is a generic simulator. It is still based on our aircraft, but it's a generic simulator. So, it's basically teaching the basics of instrument flying. When you go to specific, an Airbus A320, Boeing 737, then it is exactly like that aircraft. Exactly like a Boeing, exactly like an Airbus.
Okay.
From start to finish. Fully moving simulators, so on and so forth. That is a bit more complex than what we require at this stage.
But so say you've graduated and then you go and get a job with Virgin Atlantic or whatever, and they fly Airbus, for example.
Okay.
You then have to get another qualification to do an Airbus?
The way it works is this. With us, you would get up to the commercial pilot's license, which is the basics that any airliner would require.
Okay.
Now, airlines would require an add-on on that, multi-crew, jet orientation course and type course. So, simply put, multi-crew and jet orientation course is me working with another pilot. What do I do? What does the other pilot do? That simple.
Uh-huh.
2-3 weeks program, sponsored by the airline, sometimes not, depending on the airline. The type is then the next stage. So, whichever the airline is, you're flying that aircraft according to their procedures. You remember? According to their procedures. So, for example, Ryanair, we're late. Waste a bit more fuel, arrive on time, ring the buzzer when we're there.
And everyone claps.
Yes, same principle. Air Malta, we're late, we'll keep to our procedures, we'll land whenever we land. I'm just saying examples.
We're not scaring our passengers.
I'm just obviously giving examples. So
I have to say, Air Malta pilots, are the best landers. I'm a terrified, horrible passenger to have on your plane, and I fly Ryanair almost every week.
Ryanair have a procedure on landings, but that's why.
But Malta's, you know, we have a thing with my partner. He has to tap me on the knee, because I have to have my eyes closed.
Okay.
Just to tap me on the knee when we're about to land, so okay. I don't think something's happened.
Okay.
But with Air Malta, you sort of just land.
It's all beautiful. About procedures.
Mm.
So it's all about airline procedures, airline systems, what they would like for the actual flight.
So do you train them? So say, like, Gibraltar Airport.
Okay.
Has a very short runway.
Okay.
Do you train that kind of thing, like how to do a short runway, how to do a long runway?
We train all the basics for you to handle an aircraft.
Okay.
That is basically it. So you are, as a pilot, starting off as obviously not a pilot,
uh-huh.
to becoming a commercial pilot. So can you fly safely? Can
yep.
you control the aircraft? And are you in full control of the situation around you? If you can master that, then the rest is just minor details, which aircraft, which airport you're going to, which aircraft you're flying. Because the principles are exactly the same.
Okay.
Like driving a small car, big car, or a truck. Principles are exactly the same. Obviously,
yeah.
one's wider than the other, but the principle is exactly
and
the same.
And everything, including all the, you know, the parking symbols, all of that is the same all over the world.
Same thing.
That sounds easy.
The program trains you in a way mm-hmm. that you know the principles from start to finish. That is the most important thing.
Okay.
If you know the principles, any airport that you go, hopefully, should have all the requirements and standards throughout.
Okay. So, we're talking about students from Nepal.
Yes.
And, you know, the Arab world, whatever. How do they find Little Malta? And you, in Little Malta?
It was a long road. But you start off with getting one student,
mm-hmm.
and then just the rest follow. You just have to make sure to have a program and adjust according to their requirements, and make sure to, as much as possible, give them what they require. So, what do students usually require that are pilots? Good professional training.
Mm-hmm.
Are you giving them that? Yes. Are you giving them something that they're learning at the end of the day? Yes. Are they, which is probably the most important thing that pilots always ask, are they getting their airline job? Yes. Are they going for the assessment passing with flying colors? Yes. So once you build that kind of reputation, then the students keep coming.
Keep coming to you. But do you help them with things like accommodation? And do they have to have like a particular
visa or
something
like that? You have to guide them.
Like
you have to guide them and help them. But it's so specific with each and every student that is a nightmare. Because some students don't mind if they're sharing four people with one apartment. They don't mind. Some students want their own apartment. So.
And I guess they're not generally going to have a car, so they need to be able to get to you.
It depends on the students.
Okay.
But we try and help them with the general system of Malta, then obviously with each and every student you have to speak to and see what the requirements are. Because it's so specific with each and every student that you have to see what their needs are and obviously guide them from there.
And I'm guessing that it's an advantage for having a school in Malta because of English being one of the official languages.
The two main things that help us as Malta as a flight school is English and obviously the weather. I mean, we flew today. It's what, February? So, if you're looking in general at UK at the moment,
forget
about
it. I did watch some of those videos from Storm Ciara, I think it was. Yeah, no.
So, realistically here, throughout the year, you can pretty much fly every day.
Mm.
You get, 20 days of bad weather, but compared to air, that's nothing.
Mm.
So at least students can get the progress that they need and obviously get to their main end goal at the end of the day.
Oh, I didn't actually think about that aspect of it, but that's got to be a real
attraction. It's very crucial. And especially when you're starting off with new students, weather would affect a lot. So that obviously affects even more.
Does pilot school start in September? Or does it start at any time?
We have three main starting days full time.
Mm-hmm.
It's February, July and October.
Mm-hmm.
And the part time would be in March and October.
So if you do it part time, it takes like 4 years maybe?
It takes around 2.5-3 years.
Oh, okay.
Not that longer.
But then they can still fit in a job-ish and then...
Yes. So it depends on the student's requirements. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you split the program over 5 years if they want.
Okay.
It just depends on what they would like to do at the end of the day and what their other requirements
are. So if you're a teenager, really, you could start this and sort of do it through
university. I had people that were 16, started, wanted their commercial by 18. I had people that started at 16 and wanted to say, listen, I'll get it done by 2021. And they did that.
Wow. So how old is your oldest sort of student?
There's no age.
Oh, okay, no age. It's just an eyesight thing.
As long as you get your medical, you're fine. You can do everything up to commercial.
Okay.
It really depends on the student then.
And then youngest?
youngest to get their license would be starting the ground school at 15, 16,
mm-hmm.
getting their actual license at 17 years old. So usually once they finish their O-levels, start mm-hmm. the ground school, continue A-levels if they like, and yep. then do the flying the year after.
Wow. But it's an expensive hobby. I mean, even if you're going to do it as a job, how what's the sort of cost for a course like this? Because 2 years full-time, forget.
I always like to say it at the end.
No, because I can imagine it's a...
Yeah, if you're looking at purely as recreation, you're looking at 10, 15,000 euros as the full thing, which is not too bad considering you're flying an aircraft. Mm-hmm. If you're looking up to commercial, you're looking in the region of 60, 65,000 euros
but
from start to finish. You're back within the first year, year and a half, so that's not too bad.
It's your own thinking of the job. And if you don't have to go through university because you just need those things, you've actually saved on all those student loans, curries, takeaways.
But it depends a lot on the background of the student. That's why I told you at the start, you don't have to look as flying an aircraft as, yes, I'm going to make money, but purely because you love to fly.
To do it. Yeah, that's
yeah,
weird.
That's I think an
That's weird. No, I get it, you want to get from A to B, or, you know, you just like that kind of lifestyle, but liking flying, no.
You have to love it, you have to have a passion. But I think you have to have a passion about everything in life.
That's true, actually, for any kind of job, this is true. So, is the world short of pilots? Because I read something once about how
there is a huge short. Yeah, so basically they calculated on number of aircraft on order with the requirements of each and every aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's give an example. If I bought 10 aircraft, you need 6 pilots at least per aircraft. So that's 60 pilots. That's simple. They see the pre-orders of the major companies. They see the number of aircraft that will be issued in the next 20 years and multiply that by number of pilots. Retirement, so on and so forth. In the next 20 years, there's demand of 250,000, 300,000, the last that I read, which is...
A lot of pilots.
Yes. Just to give you an idea, last year, all the schools in the world trained 2,200 commercial pilots. There was a need for 5,000 commercial pilots.
So you're going to be doing some expanding?
We are in the process. We have been in the process. We are now, in fact, have 7 aircrafts where we started in with 3 aircrafts 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Okay.
And we're looking to expand even further.
So if anybody wants to be a pilot, it's like, you know, like I said, like being a dentist. But if anybody wants to be a pilot, you can contact Matthew Rota from the European Pilot Academy here in Malta. It's been fascinating, a bit scary.
Same.
Fascinating talking to you. Thank you very much, Matthew.
Not a problem. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, produced by me, Monique Chambers, with technical assistance from Carmela Grech and Redent Abdillah. This show is aired every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. and repeated on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. here on Campus FM.